Once again, thank you for joining us this morning. We have Nikhil, our CEO, and then Jacky Lo, our CFO, Chief of Consumer, Johan, and Chief of Enterprise, Kit Yong. We will start off with a presentation, just a quick run-through of our performance for FY 2024 by Nikhil and the management team, and then we'll head on to Q&A thereafter. Nikhil?
Yeah, let me start again, and sorry for all the interruptions and back and forth. So welcome everyone to our 2024 results. I'd like to talk about 2024 as a year, but also the second half, and then specifically on a number of matters, I'd like to point out some key trends for the fourth quarter as some leading indicators. Now, I'd like to talk about ourselves and our business lines, but I'd also like to talk about the market, both in terms of challenges as well as where we see some real opportunity. So moving on to the high-level financial results. Next page, please. Yeah, so as usual, I'll start from the top right-hand side of the page and focus on service revenue. So for the full year, we grew by 4%. For the second half, year-on-year, we grew by 5%. Now, for Q4, we actually grew by 15% year-on-year, but that is not representative due to, you know, really a pop in our the phasing of our cybersecurity revenues in the fourth quarter. Now, on service EBITDA, for the full year, we grew 3%, roughly in line with revenue. And as you know, we continue to spend materially on our transformation in 2024, as well as really the second half of 2024. And then net profit, we were able to exceed our EBITDA growth, growing our net profit at 7.7% for the year. And this is very much in line with our strategy, as we've talked about in the past, of moving from CapEx to OpEx and asset heavy to asset light, which really comes from two things. It comes from our transformation, where we're shifting from legacy to cloud and SaaS platforms, and then also shared cost structures like we do have, you know, with our 5G joint venture, Antina. And then last but not least, what's not on this page, which Jacky will elaborate on, is our strong free cash flow and our low leverage of 1.29x, which is very low relative to regional telecom peers, which gives us the firepower and the ability to continue to fund our transformation, which is at its very tail end, as well as to continue our commitment to shareholder return, both in terms of dividends and otherwise, as well as position for M&A when it comes due and becomes available. So with that, I'd like to spend some time on the next page, which is really our segment performance, but I'd also like to talk about the market and open up the aperture to a little bit about our strategy. So mobile, as all of you know, is an incredibly challenging segment with hyper competition. Johan calls it very exciting, and he'll talk about that in a bit. And you have seen the results come in from a couple of others. You saw the results come in mobile from the incumbent, which shrank a little bit quarter-on-quarter. And you saw the results come in from the number three operator, which shrank, we believe, quarter-on-quarter by well over 3%. But with a loss for the quarter of 71,000 subs. Now, in comparison, quarter-on-quarter, we were stable to up slightly, 0.4% for the fourth quarter. And for the fourth quarter, we added 94,000 subs. So as a result, our revenue market share has grown. It is now somewhere between 500-600 basis points over the number three player, so it continues to escalate in terms of that lead. And we're also materially higher in subs, which we're less focused on because we're focused on revenue market share, but nevertheless, something to point out. Now, our strategy, as we've been talking about, is multi-brand, multi-market segmentation to maximize our revenue market share in every segment and to be a leader in every segment. Now, in premium, which is an important segment for us, where the incumbent and ourselves pretty much operate alone, it's terribly important, with device plans, with high quality, with service bundling, and we will always be there focused on quality and incredible customer experience. On digital, it's a relatively crowded space, and we have a market leader, giga!, which has a differentiated proposition and ultra-high NPS. And in value, which is somewhere we didn't play in the past, we're quite aggressive now as the market shifts to the value segment. And again, we have a very differentiated but simple proposition in the segment, which is growing extremely rapidly. So I would like to close out my comments in mobile by stating that, yes, this is a market leadership strategy and a revenue market share maximization strategy, but it is also a profitability accretive and a value accretive strategy because all of our brands and all of our platforms are run off the same core platform, which every day that passes will be more automated, more data-driven, and more lean and mean. So that's mobile. Now on broadband, despite the market shrinking for others, we were able to grow. And we grew for the second half at actually about 2.6%, and we grew quarter-on-quarter at the same pace by 1.3%. Now, as you know, in the broadband segment, we are the number one player. And similarly, we have grown our revenue market share over the quarter. We drove exponential growth in our ultra-speed base, migrating our platform to 10 gigabit XGS-PON, which has allowed us to do that. And similar to mobile, we operate with multi-market segmentation, but with a bit of a difference. With StarHub, we're focused on high-quality, ultra-speed, rich bundling propositions. With MyRepublic, we're focused on an extremely tech-savvy gamer base that is really a litmus test for quality and speed. And we don't really play in the value segment, which is really only focused on by the number three, number four operator and a few others. We believe that segment is still small, but we keep an eye on it. And then again, I'd like to close off my comments on the broadband segment by stating that we have driven ARPU increase in line with the migration of our base to ultra-speed plans. And again, we have and will continue to drive a profitability-focused and value-accretive strategy. Now, last but not least, shifting to our enterprise segment, which is very important. As you can see, we drove growth in all three segments of enterprise. In cyber, year-on-year, we drove growth of 26%. In regional ICT, we drove growth of 15%. And in network solutions, we had growth of 5.6%. And what I'd like to talk about is really double-clicking on network solutions, and in particular, managed services within network solutions, where we grew over 20% year-on-year. This is a big business that's approaching a $200 million book of business, where we have grown order book extremely rapidly. Now, this segment is all about large-scale, smart city, infrastructure-centric use cases with tech and tools embedded, but focused on digital and data-driven solutions. And we offer that in a way that is underserved by the current market offerings, which is really, one or two telcos and a small handful of SIs, which really do it in a way that's monolithic and clunky. And what we have been doing it in a way is in a way that's full stack, bringing together hybrid multi-cloud with ubiquitous connectivity, with tech and tools and data-driven solutions, but all as a full stack that's highly scalable with fast time to value and lower total cost of ownership. And that's been reflected in the growth of our managed services business, as well as in the growth of our order book. I would like to point out two things as part of my closing comments on this segment and on managed services in particular. One is that this is a profitable and value-accretive segment. Our margins, as I pointed out in the past, are not at the systems integrator level because this is a platform-centric model with infrastructure embedded. So they're roughly in between systems integrators, which are in the mid-teens, and telcos, which are sort of 80-plus. So the margins are attractive, reflecting the platform-centric model that we're deploying. And number two, and importantly, we are actually in the process of integrating our regional ICT business into our managed services business. And the objective for that is to be able to do the same high-margin, platform-centric, hybrid multi-cloud connectivity use cases focused on smart city developments, not just in Singapore with large government and corporate contracts, but also in Malaysia and beyond with large government and corporate contracts. So with that, I would like to hand over to our esteemed CFO for a few comments.
All right. Thank you, Nikhil. Morning, everyone. We conclude 2024 with a strong balance sheet and solid free cash flow generation. This financial strength allows us to stay committed to delivering dividends. Our operating cash flow remained robust, growing year-on-year to $361 million. And if we look at our free cash flow, which is something we monitor closely, we generated $162 million or 9.4 cents per share on the back of higher year-on-year CapEx investments. In terms of dividends, we propose a full-year dividend of 6.2 cents per share for 2024. That's a total payout of $107 million. By year-end, we had $540 million in cash and bank balances. Our net debt to EBITDA ratio remains low at 1.29 times, improving from 1.36 times last year. We also have strong liquidity with available lines of credit and access to public debt markets, giving us plenty of flexibility for future investments to drive growth. Our interest cover remains solid at 10.7 times, well above industry norms. A quick note on borrowings. About 90% of our debt is on fixed rates, mostly locked in during COVID-19 when rates were significantly lower. So as you see in our disclosures, we have some refinancing due in 2025, and we do expect some increase in finance costs post-refinancing. But with our strong banking relationships, we are confident we can manage any potential increase in finance costs effectively. Now, let me take you through what we have achieved for 2024 on the next page. So we met our guidance across all metrics for the full year. On service revenue, we achieved 3.9% year-on-year growth, exceeding our guidance of 1%-3%. Next, on service EBITDA margin, this is in line with expectations of approximately 22%. And on CapEx commitment, including investments, that came in at 9.5%, below our guided range of 11%-13%. And lastly, as I mentioned earlier, we are proposing a full-year dividend of $0.062 per share, higher than our $0.06 guidance. For the second half of 2024, we propose $0.032 on top of the $0.03 declared in the first half of the year. This aligns with our dividend policy of paying out 80% of net profit attributable to shareholders, excluding one-off items. So next page. Some quick call-outs on this slide. So Nikhil has given you an overview on some headline numbers, so I won't repeat those. But excluding D'Crypt, which we divest in February 2024, our service EBITDA for 2024 was up year-on-year at $437.4 million, with a 21.7% margin. Net profit after tax remained strong, closing the year 7.7% higher year-on-year at $161.7 million. While free cash flow dipped slightly due to our CapEx investment, it still remained healthy at $162.2 million. As mentioned earlier, our leverage remains low at 1.29x, putting us in great position for financial flexibility moving forward. And with that, I'll hand it over to Johan, who will take you through the consumer business highlights.
Thank you, Jacky, and a good morning. And a good morning to the most vibrant and exciting marketplace. So we'll start with mobile today. And as you can see, mobile, we grew market share a lot in Q4. We added close to 100K postpaid subs. And as Nikhil mentioned, we are very determined and very excited about our multi-brand strategy, where we play in different segments in the market successfully. ARPU declined marginally. That's mainly out of bundle revenue, which is coming down, which is to be expected. Prepaid is fairly flattish, I would say, in terms of base and ARPU. And also a note on that, going forward, we will combine post and prepaid into one because the market lines are blurring in that respect. Noteworthy is actually churn. We keep churn at a low level, at 1% in this very competitive market. So with all that, we actually managed to solidify our number two position, both in revenue market share as well as in subscriber market share. Last note I want to call out on this page is what we call our T2 revenue, which is basically new verticals, which comprises, for example, of gaming and cybersecurity, which we add to our connectivity services. We generate well over 5% of our revenue in this particular segment of total. And that's growing, which is good. So that's diversification right there. Moving to broadband, noteworthy in broadband is, based on our computations, is that the entire revenue growth in the market we basically collected on StarHub brand, and that's reflected in an increase in ARPU, as you can see here, and also year-on-year growth in terms of revenue. What is driving that? Driving that is the very successful deployment of higher speed plans. We call it Ultra Speed, which I'm sure you're familiar with. And 19% end of Q4 is on higher speed plans called Ultra Speed. And that is helping us significantly when it comes to ARPU and revenue. And also, it helps us maintaining churn at a low level. You can see that 0.9%. So that's a successful product category. Entertainment, everyone is familiar with entertainment. On the next slide, entertainment is characterized by a slow but steady decline in terms of subscribers due to cord cutting, but ARPU remains very healthy at 45, and we continue to believe, and that's what we see as well, that entertainment is a very important differentiator added to our connectivity services. Interestingly enough, churn decreased to 1.2% in Q4, which is again an attribute to the team's great efforts doing cross and upsell and retention policies in a very competitive market. So to summarize, consumer market, yes, it is competitive. Yes, I think we're doing very well in all product categories, growing market share, both on revenue, but in most categories also on subscriber. And we're confident that on the back of a multi-brand strategy, we're well positioned in 25 to continue that momentum. Thank you for your attention. I'll hand over to Kit Yong for Enterprise. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Johan. Now, let me run through the enterprise overview. Right, earlier, Nikhil has talked about the growth in all three segments. If you look closer, starting with regional ICT, it's a 13% growth of revenue. It is backed by, I would say, we have continued to increase the share of wallet of our existing clients. And that really helped us to continue to grow our business. And as they evolve, we have the ability to provide with more complex solutions when we do the regional integration. When it comes to the cybersecurity services, strong momentum, right? 26% growth. There's a strong need for the cybersecurity solutions, and the cybersecurity is doing a very good job and become one of the most recognized brand for cybersecurity in the region. Now, moving to network solutions, right? Nikhil mentioned about the managed services growth. This is very important to us. It's an organic growth for us, and it's differentiated with competition that we are beating them from the global SIs to the local players, right? And we are winning on large deals with iconic brands, right? And we are seeing momentum now with a platform-based play, not a pure SI or pure connectivity, but a platform-based with integrated services and using sophisticated tools that we invested when we built Cloud Infinity and extend this to an enterprise environment. And we receive very good feedback from the enterprise clients that we engage, that these are tools that they wish they had. And they are very glad that Star had invested in it. And they are very willing to partner with us so that we can better to enable them to build a more resilient infrastructure that is come with interoperability and more resiliency for them. So we are on a good state for managed services. We have a registered material growth. And we'll continue to do that, right? With that, let me hand over to Nikhil.
Thank you, everyone. So in concluding, just two pages with respect to our 2025 outlook. So number one, what do we want to get achieved for the year? So in consumer, we want to continue to grow our revenue market share with maximizing leadership in each and every segment with our multi-brand, multi-segment strategy. We want to continue to drive Infinity Play with real focus to add additional revenues on top. We want to continue in broadband to the migration of our base to ultra speed plans, thereby uplifting ARPU steadily and driving profitability and value accretion like we do in mobile. And then very important, we will be completing our transformation in the first half of this year. And with that, we will achieve a number of things. Number one, we will have the most highly automated, most hyper-personalized, most data and AI embedded customer journeys in the market. Number two, we will have the ability and enhanced ability to drive product and bundling, you know, continuing with the heritage that we have in the past, but really in a way that is much more value creating and data driven with more precision. And then number three, we will be moving over time our consumer business, but really the whole business, but the consumer business, to a lean and mean cost structure that is attuned with the needs of the business. Now, on enterprise side, as we've talked about, we would like to aggressively continue the scaling of modern digital infrastructure with Cloud Infinity embedded, with managed services, with AI and data embedded that we say here. Second, we are in the process of integrating our regional ICT business into managed services to more aggressively drive the sort of large-scale government and enterprise smart city-based contracts that we do in Singapore, in Malaysia, and beyond.
And then number three, we continue to work on synergistic acquisitions to expand our enterprise footprint and add capabilities in the Southeast Asia region. We will continue to drive costs down, but in particular, what I would like to highlight is that we have completed the transition of our network to a hybrid multi-cloud with tech and tools, what we've been calling Cloud Infinity, with data and AI embedded. And what that really moves us from is this really sort of monolithic, call it base station approach, of the telco, you know, paradigm of the past, to establishing a new paradigm around network performance and observability down to the very edge, which will translate into better experience for customers and a greater ability for us to drive automation and cost. And then last but not least, we look forward to driving total shareholder return. This comes from our organic evolution, where we continue our commitment to dividends. But we will also, of course, continue to keep our eye focused on value accretive M&A. Moving on to the last page. So in terms of our outlook, on service revenue, we are moving away from providing percentage service revenue guidance. And that's in general, but there are three reasons for that. Number one, we want to retain flexibility to compete aggressively in the declining consumer business, to take revenue market share and maintain leadership and increase our leadership to drive retention and in-time growth. Number two, we intend to aggressively drive our enterprise managed services and regional ICT, which is an offset, obviously a positive offset. And then the third thing I'd like to point out, which is not on the page, is clearly there's a propensity for acquisitions, but also potentially for some deconsolidations, which don't necessarily have anything which are neutral to positive in terms of value impacts, but do affect potential revenue in terms of what's consolidated and what's not. Now, moving on to EBITDA, you know, absent percentage revenue guidance, we are actually shifting our EBITDA guidance to commit to stable EBITDA for the year. This will be enhanced and supported by an aggressive and focused cost optimization effort as we complete our transformation. So really moving to build, to harvest, both in terms of customer journeys, but also in terms of automation, enabling aggressive cost reduction. Number three, on CapEx, we continue our outlook and guidance of 9 to 11% of total revenue. Our transformation investments are at their tail end. Now, what we are not including here is the one-time spend for 700 megahertz spectrum, which continues to evolve. We will provide an update. We are, of course, you know, very well funded, both through our cash generation as well as our leverage capacity to take on, you know, the financial commitments associated with 700 megahertz spectrum without material financial impact. And then last but not least, we continue our commitment to total shareholder return, which is organic growth as well as returning capital to shareholders via dividends as well as other means. Our leverage, as you know, remains low, and our funding firepower is strong. Our cash generation is strong and our cash balance is strong. And we continue our dividend policy of no less than 6 cents per share or 80% of net profit, whichever is the higher. So with that, I'd like to conclude the presentation and hand it back to Amelia to open this up for questions.
Thank you, Nikhil. As usual for Q&A, if you have a question, please use the virtual hand and we'll get to your question. First in line, Arthur, would you please unmute yourself?
Yeah, hi. Good morning. Yes, can I ask some questions, please? Hi, good morning, everyone. Firstly, on the dividend, can I just clarify how we get to 6.2 cents? If I look at your FS, you're getting 8.8 cents ETS, which means you should have paid around 7 cents based on the 80% payout ratio or 6 cents or whatever is higher, right? What adjustments were made so that the EPS actually came in lower than 8.8 for you to get to 80%? Second question is, again, on the dividend. What is the commitment to this on keeping a 6% floor, 80% payout? Should M&A occur in the market? Is this number safe? Last question I had is with regard to the EBITDA outlook. It seems to be stable year on year. However, you've had a big transformation project being booked over the last few years, with it winding down this year. Why are we not seeing margins uplifting or EBITDA uplifting, given that those costs should be fading into 2025 and 26?
Okay, thanks, Arthur. You want to start off with some opening comments, since these are all about the outlook. Jackie can add on.
Yeah, on the first, I'll pass it on to Jackie. On the second, yes, the commitment is safe. You know, we don't see any issues with that, which is why I'd made the statements around our funding position, our cash generation, and our free cash flow after, as well as our existing cash position. On EBITDA, again, I'll hand it off to Jackie, but I guess the overarching comment is, yes, we're completing our transformation. And we are aggressively moving into harvest, but harvest takes some time. So there's some timing and phasing issues over the year where you really start to see the full scale of the impact in 2026 and beyond. Not to say that there isn't anything happening this year. We're working hard this year. We've realized savings, but they will be through the year. So you don't really see the full impact of it, you know, within the 1 year, 2025. But with that, maybe Jackie, you can elaborate on, you know, kind of all three.
Yeah, I thought maybe I'll just clarify the calculation first, right? If you look at the policy definition, it says 80% of our net profit, but excluding one-off items. And as we disclose in the MD&A, there are certain one-off items during the year, particularly there's some debt plus related cost provision that we utilize during 2024, which we consider as one-off. So that's actually removed from that calculation. So that explained the 6.2 cents. And I guess on EBITDA, Nikhil already pointed out, we invest and we are close to the tail end of the transformation investment. Yeah, but that's going to take some time to realize all the benefits. But I mean, as you know, the benefits will be coming from like reducing legacy costs, enhancing our service capabilities, and all the, like driving long-term operational efficiency. So all this will gradually realize this year and like mostly maybe coming from next year as well.
Does that answer all your questions?
Yeah, sorry, I'm so a little confused in terms of the Dare Plus and transformation related bookings. Where are we related to this? What percent has been executed versus what's remaining for 2025?
Yeah, go ahead, Jackie.
Right. Yeah, so I think if you look at it, for our transformation, it's related to network and also IT, transformation. So I think mostly for the network part is done, and mostly remaining is the IT transformation. So I think we shared before, we are looking at over like CapEx and OpEx investment, roughly 270 million. And through the year, the end of 2024, we have roughly spent on the investment about 90%. So the remaining 10% we plan to use up in the first half of this year, and mostly on the IT transformation.
So no change, Arthur.
Understood. But that's actually what confuses me with the EBITDA margin guidance. Or the flat EBITDA outlook, because we're just down to 10% booking. Why are we not seeing a stronger outlook on EBITDA?
Yeah, I think it goes to two blocks of things. As one is, the three items that I pointed to in terms of the revenue outlook, which is our flexibility and ability to compete in a declining consumer business, similar to what we have been doing. Growing our managed services business, acquisitions and deconsolidations. But then secondly, it's also what I talked about, which is the timing and the phasing of the harvest associated with our transformation, which is decommissioning legacy systems, which is digitizing and automating at the core, digitizing our customer engagement, moving to everything to new platforms, which is an exercise that takes some time. We will not see the full effects of that, certainly within 2025. We will see some effects, but more in 2026. So it's a system of offsets.
Got it. Thank you.
Thanks, Arthur.
We'll provide more details over the coming quarters, Arthur, as well as updates and timeline.
Okay. Next in line, Huzaini.
Sure. Thanks, and good morning, everyone. Thanks for the opportunity. So a few questions. First is on guidance once again. And on the mobile side, it is mentioned that startup will aggressively compete to defend or grow market share. So if you can throw some light, like in which segments you are going to compete, and if you are going to compete in the value segment, what is the risk of your premium segment downtrading to the value side? Just question number one. Second question is on the cybersecurity, which has done extremely well. So if you can help us, like, where the profitability is and what are the future plans in terms of potentially hitting the IPO side? And then finally, maybe going to Arthur's questions once again, on the flattish EBITDA guidance. I mean, just trying to understand that, is the decommissioning of those legacy systems a bit delayed, which is leading to some delays in harvesting the cost benefits on the back of that? And maybe the final one is on the spectrum side, wherein it is mentioned that you are in the discussions with the regulator. There is an ongoing discussion with the regulator. Maybe if you can, you know, give some color on what kind of discussions they are. Thank you.
Thanks, Husseini. Maybe let's start off with Johan on the competition.
Yeah, thanks, Husseini, for that question. So maybe if I can structure the answer to the question in a few components. Let's start with mobile, because mobile is the, I would say, more pronounced market and also the more sizable. The market is probably diverging at this point in time, where you clearly can distinguish three, I would say, I wouldn't even call it segments, but sort of three buckets. One is the premium segment. Second is the sort of, I think you used the word value segment, or no frills, as we call it internally. And then there is the digital segment. They have different dynamics due to changing consumer behavior, competitive dynamics, and also technology changes. And I refer in this respect, for example, to eSIM. So what is our strategy? Our strategy is to compete in each and every segment, and they come with their specific operating cost model. And it won't surprise you that, for example, if you talk about Giga, a digital brand, the cost operating model is a fraction of what it is compared to the main brand. So by competing in different segments, we basically manage to grow not only market share, both in subs and revenue, but also preserve the margin. So that's how we look at it. In broadband, that is not so pronounced at this point in time. We are obviously very focused on differentiation in terms of quality and service, and that has served us well for the last 1 year, and we will plan to continue that direction. And obviously, broadband consumer expectations are slightly different, I would say, as well. Quality is and brand are the two key parameters for customers to buy. So we tap into that and deliver what customers would like to have, which is quality and a better network. So hopefully that gives you a bit of a color and context around how we see the market and how we plan to compete in the different segments. Thank you.
Thanks, Johan. Jackie, would you like to take the question on the EBITDA outlook? Whether or not the delay of decommissioning of systems.
Yeah, so I think we mentioned, the decommissioning that we'll be facing, and we started this year, but that's going to carry forward into 2026. So for us to realize the full benefit of these, decline in the legacy system cost is going to mostly realize in 2026. So it's a gradual process.
Okay. And Nikhil, with the last two questions, cyber and spectrum.
Yeah, I'll talk about those. And just to add just one note of caution on top of Jackie's statement. Not caution per se, but, you know, the cost efficiencies, to be very clear, don't just come from decommissioning. There are a number of areas where we're going to be automating and getting cost efficiencies, not just decommissioning. All of those have different timeframes to implementation and harvest, and we will continue to provide more detail as the quarters pass. Now, moving on to cyber, the business has grown well, right? So as you have seen, they are ending up the year close to about, you know, approaching or really close to about 400 million in revenue. And as we have said, as they approach and get to 400 million in revenue, that is kind of the point at which, you know, they look to drive, you know, really focus and drive profitability. And that is very much of the focus to now, you know, position the business towards greater profitability. And there are many ways to doing that, which are being gone down, I would say. But roughly speaking, the business is divided into three segments, right? Three business lines, shall we say, which are interconnected. They don't just operate solo. There's the project business, there's managed services, and we're talking about Ensign here. And then there are core technology platforms with IP, right? Which go to things like automated algorithmic threat detection, et cetera, command and control. Some of the things I think you saw in our Investor Day of 2023. Now, the intent is to obviously drive the managed services business harder and core tech harder which realizes margin uplift and improved profitability. So that, in general terms, is kind of the goal for Ensign, which should realize an improving profitability over time. It's a multi-year journey. On IPO, that's not something that I can really talk about. It's a highly nuanced matter, also to do with the nature of the contracts and the business that we do, which is of a sensitive nature. But all avenues are possible, but I would caution against any kind of discussion of those kinds of financial strategies. We're really more focused on the business. Now, in terms of 700 megahertz spectrum, we do have a commitment to the 700 megahertz spectrum. We do believe it will realize returns over time in the form of, improved coverage, improved capacity, and improved customer experience, as well as to fill out, our enterprise offering for managed services, not in terms of 5G use cases, but in terms of hybrid multi-cloud use cases with embedded ubiquitous connectivity. But having said that, that will take some time. I'm not really at liberty to talk about the nature of the discussions that we have with regulators, but we'll keep you updated over the coming quarter and quarters.
Sure. This is super helpful. Maybe if I can have one follow-up, is that okay?
Of course.
Yeah, sure. So to Johan's point on that the cost to deliver giga is almost a fraction of that of premium postpaid connections. So from the absolute EBITDA point of view, are the absolute EBITDA for giga and the premium offerings similar? That's what I'm trying to understand. And if it is similar, then all this competition doesn't hit the EBITDA, because if someone trades down, still the EBITDA is preserved. So just trying to understand the cost economics over there.
All right. You're asking a very detailed question, Hussein, which I appreciate. Now, as you will understand, I can't disclose absolute accurate numbers because I will call them company confidential. But let me try to give you a bit of directional reassurance on this one, okay? If you look at percentage-wise margin, and then you can compute it probably for yourself, the dollar value is very healthy, like for like, all right? Now, you need to look at this in a wider context as well, because there are, as you probably can imagine, indirect costs, other developments in terms of market shares, market volumes, and so forth. So in the mix, I would like to reassure you on that one, that it's a healthy exercise for us. So that's what I can disclose in direction to your question. I hope that helps you a little bit. Thank you.
Sure. Very helpful. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, Husseini, it kind of goes back to my my opening comments, which is, we want to maximize revenue market share in each of the three, for lack of a better word, segments, premium, digital, and value. But this is a profitability accretive and a value accretive strategy, because the incremental margins outside of the premium segment are healthy. But the other comment I'd like to double click on, Johan, if you permit me, is let's not forget premium. Premium is really important as well. It's really significant. And really, there are only two players in premium, right? And that's where we also see a lot of juice from our transformation in driving some pretty delightful, highly automated, data-centric customer journeys. It also lends itself to our broader strategy, which is a bundled strategy. So yes, for better or worse, the approach to consumer is highly nuanced, with a lot of different flavors. It's about multi-market segmentation. It's about bundling, but every segment is important, and every segment will drive value accretion and profitability accretion. And in tandem with other products, will also drive cross-sell and upsell. So we like the fact that we have a lot more firepower and tools at our disposal than others in the market, particularly with the transformation almost completed.
Can I add one thing on the back of what Nicole mentioned? Also, again, I think for you, Husseini, and the others, maybe to get a bit of a better triangulation. We obviously measure and manage churn in the different categories. And one of the things really in the premium segment, we're really I would say, obsessed on is managing churn. And our churn in that category is super low. And the team also is very active in what I would call value creation in terms of cross and upsell in that particular segment. And as Nicole mentioned, we have one competitor, and I wish I could give you a bit more information, but I would cross a boundary in terms of our relative performance to that, but you can probably conclude. So rest assured, we play in each segment or each value bucket in the market with the objective to win, and we do so. Thank you.
Thank you.
Super helpful.
Thanks, Zini. Next up, we have Kenneth.
Hi, good morning, management. Thank you for the opportunity. Just two questions for me. First is on the net profit target. I think if we take into account the current level of competition that we're seeing, plus your flat EBITDA guidance, should we still be expecting that 80 million incremental NPAT target by FY2027? And will there be a revision to this? Second question is on the split. Could you just give us a rough sense of how much of mobile revenue is between premium, digital, and value? And add on to that, do you have a longer-term revenue proportion target for the value segment? Thank you.
Thanks, Kenneth. Maybe let's start with Johan, since he just answered the last question on the mobile business.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nikki, you can take
Can you rephrase the question for
me? He wants to know the proportion between the various the three segments.
Okay. Thank you very much, Kenneth, for that question. That's a little bit, I would say, proprietary. So I would love to answer your question, but actually, I don't think I can. Sorry for that. Yeah. What I can maybe give you directional is that we believe going forward there will actually be four big buckets in the mobile market. One bucket which we didn't discuss as such is basically what I would call eSIM travel SIM market, which is a segment on its own. Then you have low cost or low price, then you've got digital, and then you've got premium. They have different dynamics, and I would give away competitive information if I would answer your question in more detail. So I would hope you respect me for that. Thank you.
Yeah, just to add to Johan's comment, you know, Kenneth, in a nutshell, you know, our intent by driving our strategy this way across segments with the tech and tools and firepower that we have at our disposal, is to be, you know, kind of neutral or zen to the way the market shifts between segments, because we're a leader in each and we leverage, you know, all the firepower and tech and tools that we have at our disposal. And we make money in each segment and we drive value in each segment. And that's not the position of the other players in this market. So that's what we want to do.
Yeah.
Now to your question on, you know, our net profit after tax target, you know, it obviously is very much our intent and our target to get to that number by 2027. Having said that, you know, I would say the market continues to evolve in a very rapid way. And I think particularly in consumer, it's evolving in a way that we haven't seen in the past, right? We are doing a lot of work around what is under the hood, what we hope to achieve in the consumer segment, what we hope to achieve with our transformation, what the opportunities are for scaling our enterprise business aggressively as we have been. And we'll continue to provide updates as we go through the next few quarters.
Kenneth, does that answer your questions?
So 2027 is, you know, in this world, it's a long time away, Kenneth. So I think it's less about that and, you know, perhaps more about the planning that, you know, we're doing and the replanning that we're doing, both positive, negative and positive, you know, defensive as well as offensive, which we'll continue to update you on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kenneth.
Thank you.
Could you please unmute yourself?
Yeah, hi. Thank you for the presentation. Just one question from me. Any color on depreciation next year? Could it drop further due to lower CapEx? Thank you.
Sorry, could what drop further?
Depreciation.
Oh.
Yeah, so I think we mentioned this actually on the last call. So I think with the spectrum rollout, we expect actually higher depreciation expense here in 2025.
Yeah.
Amanda, does that answer your question? I think so, right?
Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, so I think you're certainly, you know, going to see a lag between depreciation versus, you know, any kind of return on the 700 megahertz spectrum, whether from consumer or enterprise. So yes.
Okay, next up we have
Hongwei. Okay, I have a couple of questions. The first one I noticed is that you mentioned that the new verticals in mobile contribute more than 5% of mobile revenue. How fast is this segment really growing? And is it profitable? That's my first question. Then my second question is that to be more specific, like how much firepower are you like setting aside for acquisitions? I know that there's quite a number of opportunities out there, but just like roughly how much should we be thinking about?
Okay, Johan?
But thank
great
you
question, Weihong.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say, thank you very much for that question. So the accurate number is actually 6%, which is the contribution of what we call T2, and I'll come back to classification of what T2 means. Out of the consumer service revenue. Now that grows, and I can't disclose really the growth percentage because again, I think I would be helping my dear competitors who are probably listening in somewhere as well. Now, what does that comprise of? There are three categories in that particular bucket. Number one is cyber, and I'll come to that in more detail. Number two is gaming, and number three is health. And under cyber, there's also some other insurance products. The fastest growing, and that won't surprise you, is anything related to cybersecurity, which we offer as an add-on service in most plans to our customers. And the other one, which has a good performance at the moment, is gaming and what we call LifeUp, which is health-related as a marketplace, is a bit smaller. Are they profitable? That was your part two of the question. Absolutely, they are, and they deliver a very healthy margin as well. They typically come on a variable basis, so we don't have any fixed cost structure in the back, and we actually are very much in line with our One App strategy, offering this across the board, both for subscribers of StarHub connectivity service as well as non-StarHub customers. The last point I want to call out is that, and it's an interesting footnote, that gaming actually we offer, I'm going to give some information here, but that's fine. Beyond Singapore, and actually 7 out of our 10 gaming customers come from outside of Singapore. So that gives you a bit of context in terms of how we look at that. And yes, this is a very important part of our business because it's a growth business. So stay tuned. Thank you very much for the question.
And Nikhil on the M&A firepower.
Oh, that's... I'm hesitating, Weihong, because I don't want to put a dollar number out there, which might be misread, depending on you know how people might read it and the constituency that they're coming from. Look, all I can say is we're at 1.3 times net debt to EBITDA, right? You know, the telco median is about 2.5. You know, with small to mid-sized M&A, you know, people can comfortably, and I think we could stay comfortably under the telco median. For instance, in enterprise, right? But for large-scale M&A, you know, what you typically see is people will go above the telco median, and then they'll kind of delever over time as the synergies come through. So that's kind of how I would dimension it. You know, I just want to stay away from dollar numbers. We also obviously have, you know, a very strong and strongly committed bank group. And we have free cash flow generation year on year. So I guess I would answer the question perhaps by saying, you know, funding and firepower is not so much of our issue. It's more about, you know, the opportunity, the value creation case. And just, you know, if and when these things happen, right?
Thanks, Nikhil. Hongwei, do you have any follow-up questions?
Oh, that's all from me. Thanks for answering. And I think that's quite comprehensive, actually.
Okay.
Thank you, Hongwei.
Thank you.
Thanks, Hongwei.
Okay, I think we have a couple more minutes. And since we started a few minutes late, we'll be happy to stay on a little longer.
Exactly. Yeah, sorry about that.
That you might have. So if you have a question, please raise your hand.
Arthur, anything else? Husseini? You can take up the time and space left by Sachin. I think we're good then, right? Okay, let's wait. Yeah.
Going once, twice. Okay, there are no more questions. Happy Friday, and let us know if you like this morning format. And you know, at any time, if you want to catch up with management, let us know. You know how to get me. Have a good Friday and weekend ahead. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you.